I'd like to welcome you to the next in my series of Global Health Perspectives podcasts. My name is Derek Yach. I'm the president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World. And these podcasts aim to look at issues on the nexus of smoking and health. Today, I'm really pleased to have a friend and colleague, Chitra Subramanian, join me. She's based in Geneva, Switzerland. And what we hope to do is to go through her journey into global public health and many of the impacts she's had beyond that. Let me start off, Chitra, by just asking you to sketch your first work that really brought you into massive international interest through the unraveling of the Bofors India Howitzer weapons deal.
Thanks, Derek. And thank you for having me on this podcast. And thank you for the very generous introduction. Yes, I started out as a reporter and ended up investigating what became the multi-million dollar scam, corruption scandal in India, known as the Bofors scandal, which contributed to the electoral downfall of the then Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi. And the story, in short, was that India bought guns, howitzers from Sweden, for which bribes were paid into Swiss banks in Geneva into secret accounts. And I just followed the story lead by lead. And when I started working on it in 1987, I had no idea what I was doing. I knew what I was doing, but I didn't realize what it would really mean in terms of the importance. So, yeah, that is the Bofors story in 1 minute. The other thing that I want to add is that at that time, Switzerland was also an extremely closed Swiss banking system was extremely closed. And it was widely believed that the government was in hands in glove with countries. But, you know, that was 30 years ago. And Bofors was one of the stories, along with the Marcos story, which perhaps is more well known, which led to the change of jurisprudence in Swiss law. Today, for example, if any country seeks Swiss help in a criminal investigation, you are not allowed to go to the local level and the state levels by which you can delay. If the federal government accepts your request for assistance, is granted immediately. And it took 10 years. That work took 10 years from 1987 to 1987. 1987 to 1997, after which, I went into public health and then we met. So that's the background.
Yes, and it seems, I can remember you always saying that some of the key things you learned through the process was the need to focus on getting the truth and transparency out and exposing the corruption, which is a very interesting background for you then to have been asked by Gro Harlem Brundtland to join her transition team before she became the head of the World Health Organization. And yes, it'd be great if you just mentioned a little bit about the thinking in the transition team and then how you landed up then diving into the field of tobacco control.
Well, Dr. Brundtland is a leader. As a Norwegian prime minister, she's obviously seen a lot of things in her life. And I think she came in and she has a medic, she's a doctor. And I was asked by her to be part of her the election team. It was a small team of people in Geneva. And it was the Indian ambassador who connected us, because they were looking for someone from India who could do this kind of work. And I suppose I was that person. It was very clear to me from the very beginning that she was a person who wanted to hold up very ethical standards. Of course, she knew that the world of public health needed a lot of cleaning up to do, but she was the one who was going to hold up the light. So in the campaign team, and there were three or four of us, and we worked out of Geneva. My job was to help with the media and also with write up policy briefs on key issues she was focusing, of which tobacco control was one. And then she won. So after she won, she realized, I think, that tobacco needed a good fight. You know, we were up against an industry which was extremely. It was an industry which had long arms and deep pockets, and that's when you and I met, and that's how TFI came to be. And I remember one of the first things you said to me was that we need to find out the extent of penetration of the tobacco industry within WHO. And that to me came as a shock, because I hadn't realized, I mean, I had some idea of institutional decay or how bureaucracies work, but I didn't realize the extent. And this was the time also, I think people should know about the Minnesota hearings and the famous settlements. So there was a lot of talk about looking at the tobacco industry. And I think I was, it was a huge learning curve for me. But transitioning from investigative journalism to this was back to building, you know, bit by bit. So, yeah, that's the background.
Yeah, and of course, we did land up having what is unique in the UN, an inquiry into the tobacco industry, which exposed the depth of penetration into the policy process and raised, I think, the concerns that many of those still continue to this day. I think the one big contribution that helped frame our work going forward was your focus on moving the debate away from individual frailty and individual smokers to corporate accountability. And I think the team you had and the building of the Framework Convention Alliance and the NGOs was something that is now long forgotten, but maybe just a word on that would be useful.
I mean, yes, we realized that the damage was not happening in science, or the scientific evidence was in for many, many years, but the damage was happening, where in the world of film and in the world of sports. And, you know, remember, we went to FIFA, we went to the Olympics. We created the Framework Convention Alliance. And I think it's important also for people to know that we were the first people, we held the first public hearings in the entire UN system, because the tobacco industry wanted to be part of the negotiations, you may recall. And we said, no, you can't be part of the negotiations. But what you can do is to send us your views. And they had 3 months to respond. So we actually had public hearings. It's never been done before in the UN at the scale that we had done it. So there were a lot of firsts there. We brought in civil society. We brought in the media. We brought in storytellers. We brought in artists. We brought in Toscani, the man from Benetton, who actually taught people what risk meant, understanding of risk. So it was like public health was talking a new language.
If we jump forward 15 years since the adoption of the Framework Convention, just one or two observations you might have on whether it achieved the hopes and vision that we all worked for those years ago.
At the time that the Framework Convention was negotiated, it was best in class. We can always look back and say we could have done better, but it was the first treaty. But if I were to just comment on it now, if I were to make a change, it's become very obvious that you need more than just the health sector to bring about the kind of change that was being attempted by WHO at that point. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think let's keep moving to where we are today. And I think we're all too aware that we're in the midst of a global pandemic. Your own country is in lockdown. The impact on the lives of the poorest and migrants we know is a really big issue, and hopefully it's not going to get substantially worse. I'd love your thoughts on how you're seeing the response in India. Both in terms of colleagues who may be on the ground and how the government is managing a population of over a billion people.
So today the Prime Minister announced that the lockdown will be extended till the 3rd of May. And I think it's a good decision because there is no option. What they're trying to do is that there are limitations on testing and that is being handled, but I think they're trying to control the damage. Sitting in Switzerland where I know the curve has been flattened, I mean, there are no more new cases, I feel I'm privileged. I also want to say here that I live with cancer. And I have access to the best in the world. So sometimes I'm a little hesitant to give advice to anybody, especially in India, where I know that the ground situation for millions of Indians is difficult. But in a country of 1.3 billion, I know for a fact that the state governments are mobilizing on a war footing. They are from the railways to the police, to the law. You mentioned the sector, people are mobilizing. What this will all mean, I don't know. And I wouldn't dare a guess. But what it does show is that the health sector needs to really think very differently now. And the other point I want to make is that on Sunday, I think over the weekend, the G20 health ministers are meeting. They're having a video conference. And I think one of the agenda items that should be considered by them during this pandemic is that if they wish to remain relevant, they really got to think very differently, Derek.
Yeah, but I think differently, you're going back to the point that you said about tobacco, that the links between health, trade, development need to be far firmer and taken with the seriousness they deserve.
Indeed, because, I mean, look at there is this race about vaccines. I mean, the question obviously is going to be access. You know, who's going to own this? You need to get out. You need to get into trade. You need to get into development. You cannot cope with a pandemic of this nature through committees or through documents or files. You need hands and people on the ground. You need people who think quickly. Let's just look at the work of WHO and what was achieved on the Framework Convention. Everything was done literally hitting the road on the ground. I'm not comparing it to the pandemic, but you need people who understand the scale and the entire spectrum that has to be called into action. So basically, we are looking at leadership. We need leaders, and I hope the G20 and the others realize that. We're looking at leadership in public health.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'm reminded is that for many years you were reporting on the WTO very closely and following the actions. And of course, we know we had to deal with that during the tobacco era, but no doubt, as you're saying, if we're dealing about new patents and new products and new things required to solve the many complexities of the pandemic, those linkages need to be very strong and explicit.
Indeed. I mean, it was South Africa, the situation in South Africa that led, it was the first test of compulsory licensing of WTO. This was a transition.
Yeah, that was the HIV/AIDS demand.
Absolutely. And it needed leadership. It needed people like, you know, Nelson Mandela, Mr. Bill Clinton. And I think there was also Merck involved because this was absolutely, people were dying. And that's what we're looking at today. And I was reading some scientists, and you know, living with my own cancer, you know, I do want to make the point, and I hope I'm making it clearly, is that scientists are working 24 hours a day, nonstop, to find a solution. They're not sitting out on television screens; they're actually racing against time. And one of the biggest lessons that I have learned I call myself a cancer graduate is that we really need to look at innovation. We really need to look at how much companies come in and the work and the money that they put in without knowing what the results will be, but they keep the hope and the faith alive. I know heaven and earth is moved from the time a molecule till you get to a molecule, the amount of research, it's based on hope and faith and hours of work. So, you know, a big round of applause for all the scientists and all the health workers around the world who are out there just trying to save us.
Yeah, and I think one of the paradoxes to end with is, you know, right in the beginning you were talking about science, and we spoke about the tobacco industry, and now of course the question is, how does one take advantage of the fact that very advanced science on the vaccine, on other products, is happening in the private sector, the pharmaceutical industry, obviously the biotech industry, but even among some of the tobacco industry. And we have those saying, well, you know, that's not a good thing. You know, I'd love your perspective on, does science, if science has an impact, should we be saying where the boundaries should be and what you take and what you don't take?
I'll quickly share a story. When I first arrived in Geneva as a reporter, all wide-eyed and wanting to save the world, I worked with a UN health agency, and I was quite shocked that they were accepting money from a private organization, because for me, the private sector was already full of bad people. And the head of this agency sat me down one day over lunch and said, when you are living in a hellhole in a poor country, you would take money from the devil if it helps you live. Now, I don't know if that answers the question about the tobacco industry, but people, if there is something that the tobacco industry can do or is willing to invest to stop the epidemic, I genuinely think they should be part of the debate. I think that anybody who can contribute should be allowed to contribute. And let the public decide. The public is not foolish. I think today's children are extremely smart. Let them decide. This is the barrier which has to fall. These false barriers, these false, you know, these false gods, they have to go. And believe in today's children, because they know. They know where the information is coming from. They're smart enough to tell the difference. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, I would also, you know, remind our listeners that all of the great religions put the sanctity of human life and the protection and the value of lives uppermost, and suspend all other rules of religion if you can do that. And this is one of those unique times when we have to look at how we can join forces in strange, unusual, complex partnerships to make a difference, not just for now, but for many of the other health problems we'd face. I want to thank you sincerely, Chitra, for joining us, and to thank our listeners. And please remember to stay safe, stay positive. I hope that you'll be able to send us questions to podcast@smokefreeworld.org, and remain in touch. Thank you.